Hello, and welcome to the Actemium of Ancyon podcast. I'm your host, Kim Collette. Today, I'm joined by two of our subject matter experts, Bruce Slesser, our Digital Transformation Practice Director, and Rob Herman, Senior Account Manager. Bruce helps manufacturers unlock new ways to leverage technology and data to improve operations, and Rob works directly with our customers, hearing firsthand about their challenges and priorities. Together, they bring two perspectives, strategic and customer-facing, that will shape our conversation on a topic getting a lot of buzz lately, data ops. For some, it's crystal clear. For others, it's still a bit of a mystery. But one thing is certain. It's changing how manufacturers think about efficiency, quality, and decision-making. Bruce, let's start with the basics. In manufacturing today, what does data ops actually mean? And why has it gone from a nice-to-have to a must-have?
Yeah. So, you know, most people are used to hearing about DevOps, right? That's been a term that's been around for a while, mainly used in IT. You know, a decade ago, if you were to talk about data ops in manufacturing, people might have thought that you were just trying to sound smart, right? And that it was really kind of a luxury or a nice-to-have if you had the extra budget to do data ops. But now it's really a requirement, right? Data ops today means that you've got a process and a team that, you know, is formed around a culture about getting data access, getting it right, contextualized, and getting that data in front of the right person in a timely manner. And manufacturing, with the speed that it happens at today, that closed loop feedback of that information is more critical than it's ever been. So really, it's a discipline of making industrial data available, contextualized, and trustworthy so that you can make the right decisions in the moment and not hindsight.
Yeah. So Kim, I think it's been really interesting. We've had conversations with a ton of customers recently, and I think the really important thing is that they're all being asked the same thing. They're asked how they're actually going to use these tools and use AI in their manufacturing facilities to make improvements. And the question we get is how do you do that? The thing I think that people are struggling with is they've heard so long that AI, if you don't get on the train, it's going to leave you. And what we're seeing now is that if you don't get on the train, it's going to run you over. The tracks have gotten so wide, they keep it it's going to hit everything. It's going to impact everything. And so what's been really fun and interesting and new is working with Bruce and team on what that looks like. How do you make it accessible to people? And then, you know, where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, why is it a must-have? Why do we have to incorporate data ops into our digital strategy and our programs? It's the edge that it can give manufacturers. If we think about reporting and how it's historically been done, where, you know, maybe you get a report around production from today, tomorrow, right? And you're reacting a day later, a shift later. Everything's already happened. You haven't made the adjustments. So you're working towards improving on something that, again, those conditions might change tomorrow. So really, it's about being able to speed up that decision making and have the confidence behind the information that you're looking at to make those decisions in real time. It's really the end goal. And then, of course, a lot of the capabilities that are coming along with that foundation and that data structure as we start to talk about more use cases with AI.
So it sounds like from what you're all saying, those that aren't getting on the train are going to be left behind and really suffer to keep up, be as productive, as efficient as their competitors.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what's really confusing for people now in that vein is there's a lot of new concepts here. And so think ones we wanted to touch on today, ones like UNS, ones like MCP, ones like containerization. It's what does that mean? How does it apply to organizations? For Bruce and I, it's interesting because we live and breathe this stuff every day. For our customers who are running their manufacturing facilities, they don't have the time necessary to dedicate to learning about what's coming. I mean, just within the last 6 months, this industry's changed like crazy. And so what we're trying to do is focus attention on what matters and what's gonna impact them, not just today, but years from now. And I think one thing we've talked a lot about has been that the tool that's going to run your manufacturing facility a decade from now doesn't exist today. And so how do we get ready for it?
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of buzzwords with all of this. So for those that aren't familiar, What is a unified namespace? And how does that change the way manufacturers think about real-time and contextualized data?
Yeah, what is a unified namespace, right? So picture in your head a traditional way that we would hook up and connect data from different systems. You needed a connection from a PLC to an HMI. You made that connection. You made a connection to a database to get some additional context from maybe an MES system. Maybe there's an ERP connection. There might be in our reporting systems. Those have separate connections to the SQL servers. What you end up with is sort of a spider web of interlinked connections or point-to-point connections everywhere. And it's ultimately a rat's nest, right? And that's how most data architectures look under the hood. So every system talks directly with every other system. And when one changes, you have to rewrite a dozen connections in order to fix that broken link. What a UNS framework and architecture aims to solve is just that. It's a central hub for where your data comes into and where people can subscribe and consume that information and publish to a single location, ultimately that single source of truth, right? It's a real-time industrial data architecture structured around your business model. We think a lot around ISA 95 modeling, where you've got enterprise, site, area, line, equipment. That structure is sort of the backbone of how we semantically organize or think about our business. And then we add additional contextualization into that semantic layer with informational data models. So MES gets layered in, maybe KPIs around a line, and then KPIs nested under that around an asset. CMMS information, you know, when is our last work order? When was our last breakdown? All that information contextualized and easily navigatable in the way that you would think about your business workflow. That's what really a UNS does, is bringing all that information together into a single context data model.
Interesting. So tell me, what are the biggest misconceptions or pitfalls you've seen when organizations implement or try to implement a UNS?
Yeah, so you see a lot around MQTT brokers, for instance, and there's a lot of misconceptions that you just put a broker in and that's a unified namespace, right? That's just, it's not true. It's the framework and the architecture around it. Certainly a broker can be a part of that architecture, but really it's the whole strategy in how you connect and collect that data and then eventually store it in a contextualized way. Another thing that we see a lot of times is that they want to stand up a UNS, and really they're doing it just because they have seen an article or read something in the news about it or listened to a podcast and said, we really need to have a UNS, without tying it to a real business case. And so what happens, it's like building a highway to nowhere. If you don't have a business case to solve, it's really difficult to be successful because you don't have that angle. And so we see that be a challenge where we really start to walk customers back to, okay, you want a UNS, that's awesome. But what do we want to really solve? What are we trying to go after that's going to actually make an impact on the business? And then last is just skipping governance. It's extremely important to be able to make sure that when you're modeling that data, it's structured in a way that makes sense for the business. If everybody is just publishing information randomly without any structure or different structures throughout, it makes it really hard to start to navigate. It makes it really hard to understand what that model is going to look like. And you lose a lot of the efficiencies, especially as we start to talk about bringing that information model up into a cloud data warehouse to be consumed.
Just to add one bit on the finding a pilot, finding the right fit for where this starts and the business use case. It's in corporate America, if there's one thing we know about it, it's that they have a short attention time span and that they want to see results. And so when they don't see them, these things can get steamrolled or they can get lumped into waste of money or waste of time. And so our biggest fear in this is that sometimes customers are setting their expectations either too large, too small. They're not really driving the conversation on what it's going to look like and what value they should expect to see. And then setting realistic timeframes that that people can get excited about.
Yeah.
How have we been able to help guide some of the customers that we work with on where to start with this and what's a good beginning point?
So we say, don't boil the ocean, right? We're trying to set up standards and a foundation that we can add additional use cases to as the namespace continues to grow and as those use cases come up. But, you know, are we trying to improve yield? Are we trying to understand scrap? Are we visibility into our OEE? A lot of things like machine state and throughput are very low-hanging fruit pieces to start getting and modeling that data and then seeing patterns to make improvements. Those are things that make a difference in the day-to-day workflow and are good use cases for also having in real time to build content around. So, you know, we say, again, don't bite off more than what you can chew. Narrow it down to something that you can manage and actually focus on the foundation, not this entire wide consume everything at once.
Got it. Makes sense. So model context protocols are getting more attention lately. Would you tell me what are MCPs and why do they matter for manufacturing?
I'd say that an MCP is model context protocol. So it's how we're serving data up from our UNS, from our systems, so that we can use some of these AI tools, some of these new things you're seeing in industry, whether that's OpenAI, whether that's an Anthropic product, whether that's one of these newer tools. It's serving up information in a way that the tool is able to make use of where and what it has, and then it can analyze it, it can contextualize it, it can build things around it. And so, Bruce, correct me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that was really good, right? A lot of the analogies that you hear is it's kind of the USB protocol for AI. And that is that you can have most anything connected to the other end of it, transmitting information in and being able to understand that information and offer it up. The way that I've kind of been thinking about it a little bit differently is if you think about, oh, your toolbox at home, right? Or you walk into a job site for the first time and you've got a giant toolbox with hundreds of different tools in it. You open it up with absolutely no instructions and you see a bunch of tools that make no sense to you. That is kind of how AI would see a lot of your data sources without MCP, if you can connect them. There's no context. With MCP, we start to wrap in some information around those tools that you have. So we tell the AI model, okay, I've got this list of tools. For this tool, it's able to do, and you provide some sort of description around it. You provide it, what are the parameters that tool can accept? What are the inputs that you can give to it? And then what can you expect back out of that tool? What it does is when you start to have a conversation with that AI, it's able to interpret what it is that you're asking, look through that entire list, and now it understands what those tools are capable of. It will either pick one or start to chain multiple tools together to get you the end result in that data. And that's, you know, really the goal, right? Is to be able to expose complex data through an agnostic way and then have it interpreted for you. Because a lot of the times what's returned is a large data set that would take somebody typically a very long time to comb through and get true results out of.
And now, so combine those two concepts and the one we just talked about, UNS, Unified Namespace, with this MCP concept.
Yep. So think about that semantic model, that hierarchy that we started with, right? That's kind of the starting point of, tell me where I need to look as a production line lead for line one in my plant. Well, our data, if it is not structured and streaming and stored with that context, it has no idea what pressure transmitter is tied to specifically to what line or what asset or what equipment, what throughput is tied to that same information. So what our UNS does is it provides that context layer for the model to say, okay, I have line one in our Exton PA plant, and that bakery is producing X product. All that context is in that model. When it goes out, gets that information back, now it has all that additional information in the hierarchy that you were asking the question for. Without that, it's just turning back a bunch of time series data. It would be much more difficult to try to put that information into context for you and have actionable results.
So are there any specific challenges or risks that manufacturers should be aware of when they're adopting MCP?
Yes, absolutely. Ask me how I know.
How do you know, Bruce?
So with any new technology, there are hurdles, right? This is moving at a fast pace. The capabilities of models and, you know, agentic AI are growing every, you know, pretty exponentially, but those limitations still exist today. And we think about with manufacturing, when you ask a question about a production line and you're trying to understand information or history about what it's been doing over a period of time, for instance, a week, I want to know how line one has done this week versus last week. Without the MCP server being thoughtfully built to produce results in, say, if I'm asking about a week, maybe I give you a daily summary instead of giving you the entire payload that might be every single second of data. What we're up against still with AI is the size of a context window. That's how much information that your AI model can consume at once and how long that conversation with it can be. So understanding that, we hit limitations very fast when we want to consume and pool significant amounts of data, which is very much often what manufacturing plants are producing. When someone says that they've just added MCP capabilities to their software, right? Or, you know, they've slapped on an MCP server to an existing API. If it's not thoughtfully built around our manufacturing use cases and understanding the extreme amount of data that can be returned, you're going to immediately hit a wall as you're trying to use AI for that use case. So that's one that is very real and people are working through today. You know, you can be curbed very easily because you have to understand a lot of those use cases, and then you can build those MCP servers more thoughtfully. But if you're just running and gunning, it can be a little bit touch and go.
So slow down and really think about
exactly
what it is you're trying to achieve.
Yep. And governance is the other piece. You know, if you're changing up your structure, your semantic model, your hierarchy, or you don't have a good convention around it, it can be really hard for a model to interpret. And so if that's changing a lot and you're just introducing and publishing new information and storing it not thoughtfully and not with a use case intent, it can create noise. So that's the last thing we want to do, is introduce noise to models that are trying to identify patterns and provide information.
So by noise, tell me a little bit more about what you mean there.
Yeah. Basically, noise is just, if I'm asking a question to my AI model and I have injected process variables into my information model that are just not relevant to that information space that it's in, it's going to return that information back to the model. It may hallucinate and come to conclusions based on that value or that characteristic of the process that is really just not pertinent. And so that is why we have to be thoughtful in how we architect and structure our UNS and then store that data, or else we can be introducing complexity as we go to consume and use that data later. More is not always better.
Makes sense. So containerization is another term that we're hearing more often. What does it mean in an industrial context, and why is it gaining momentum now?
Containerization is definitely one of those buzzwords that's finally starting to mean something on the plant floor. But we hear about containerization a lot from people who are doing home labs. You know, it's a quick way to stand up applications, but really, in plain English, it's just packaging your software up and reducing the overhead and the maintenance associated with a typical virtual machine. Those deployments can essentially run anywhere. It could run on your laptop, it can run on a server, it can run on a data center. And why it matters to manufacturing is because we can now deploy our IIoT platform, our brokers, an MCP service, a machine learning model, all that can be deployed in minutes. You're not having to stand up virtual machines. You're not having to maintain patching across multiple machines. The overhead and infrastructure required to maintain, not just start up those machines, is significantly lower. And so what that means is you can get to a value proposition significantly faster than traditional deployments.
And I think the other space that gets you that's really exciting for our customers is that all of the slop that comes with those upgrades and those maintaining virtual machines, as far as worries about security breaches, about OS compliance, about patching, about all the things that we have to handle when we're upgrading a server, downtime associated with it, when you do it, how often you do you do it on holidays, all that goes away. And it becomes very, very clean. And when you're upgrading then to a new software or a new application, you're upgrading on value, not on need, not on some obsolescence timeframe that has nothing to do with your business.
Yeah. Is other pushback or concerns that you often hear from IT or operations about containerization?
I think the one that we hear is sometimes from operations engineering potentially, right? In that they are used to maybe having a local server that they maintain, they can log in, they that's theirs. And while that has historically been true, I would probably, you know, always argue the fact that nobody has ever pushed back on saving when a patch gets pushed out and all of a sudden you come in on Monday morning and you've got a bunch of emails or a bunch of voicemails about how production is down, and your server is ultimately the reason why, because you're running your SCADA platform on it, or maybe you're you know, it's how your MES is deployed. What goes away with that is a lot of the risk. So you're giving up a little bit of leverage, right? A lot of times containerization is owned by IT, right? They've got an enterprise environment where it is hosted from. Although there are several different options for bringing that down to the plant floor level that is now making that way more approachable for OT teams and not just IT. Those technologies are really making it very approachable and more of a common solution now as we talk with customers. The fact that they can get to deployment in a couple of hours versus waiting for tickets for VMs to be built and procured, security to go through on those machines, it's a no-brainer. I will also say that some legacy applications, a lot of them that run just on a typical Windows machine or a server, those desktop applications are not containerized, right? They can't be containerized. These are web applications. So that is a requirement. Not every application can just be containerized. And that's sometimes a misconception that is still out there that, oh, well, I can just go containerize my existing SCADA platform. We can't.
It's important to do the homework to make sure that your tech stack would make sense.
Exactly.
The applications you're using.
And that comes back to your digital strategy, right? We want to make sure that as you're planning for technology, it's meeting the requirements of the business, and that requirements should be driven by that digital strategy. We want an open architecture. We want to support containerization. That all has to be up front.
So speaking of that, talking about strategy and integration, you're a plant manager, you're a digital transformation lead. Starting today, how should you think about UNS, MCP, and containerization? Is it, you know, separate steps that you have to build on, or part of a single architecture?
Overall, it's got to be part of an entire vision for the business. It is not something that happens overnight, but it is absolutely important that as you start to go down this road, it's not just a UNS project, or it's not just a containerization project. They're not separate, right? They're part of that vision. And so you're using all these different pieces at different scales or different levels to create a framework and a solution that is repeatable and scalable across the business. So oftentimes you are are implementing one or many of these different components or pieces. Keeping in mind future use cases like MCP, for instance, may be really something that you want to make sure that the solutions you're putting in place will be able to support and build around that protocol. But the mistake that we see is that people start building without thinking about those use cases. And so that's where we really need to take a step back. Or, you know, they containerize a one-off tool that doesn't necessarily fit into the bigger picture. You got to design for that end state, that North Star vision for the business, if you will.
So it's really just like developing a roadmap and having a long-term vision plan, maybe a 1, 3, 5 year plan or strategy. Is that an area that we help customers with?
Yes, absolutely. So that walking them through the process that we're seeing, we're so used to working with customers and seeing different verticals and what their needs are, and then making a digital strategy, digital roadmap that makes sense for their business based on where they are today. Not where they want to be tomorrow, but where they are today and how they get to where they want to be tomorrow. So I think if I just go back even one more to the last statement, we talked a little bit about what does that digital strategy look like? Well, for our manufacturers, the most important thing, we actually heard from one this week that we talked about, at the end of the day, they have to make product. And so how do all of these things help them make more product? How do they make it faster? How do they make it better quality? And so really laying out what's important to ensure that your business is able to make product and use some of these cloud tools to then give people information to make decisions in a different capacity. That's all well and good, but the product has to get out the door. And so a lot of the other stuff we're talking about here from a strategy perspective, what is required and how do you use these future state tools to improve your facility, that happens down at the plant floor level. And so kind of laying out that whole start to finish, to the top to bottom picture for your organization, what makes sense for you. And I think that's what Bruce has done an awesome job of helping a lot of our customers think from a high level perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say one of the things that I would caution you on is analysis paralysis. If you were to draw a Venn diagram of the tools that are available in this space, it's
overwhelming.
It can be overwhelming. And if you're a thought leader in your business, you're trying to take this step, it can be very overwhelming. And if you want to try to analyze every single technology and every single product that's out there, and you want to pilot every single one of them in a small micro level to figure out exactly what your strategy is going to be, you're most likely going to be in a death spin, really, because it's overwhelming.
Yeah. So you need to work with folks that are experienced and have the background that can help guide you based upon what it is you're trying to achieve, at least from the get-go.
Exactly. If you have clear goals, you can land on a lot of these tools and you'll still be successful regardless of the every little detail and feature that is different between them.
Good advice. So let's look ahead 3 to 5 years. How do you think combining UNS, MCP, and containerization change plan operations?
So tools are the capabilities are increasing very rapidly. And if we think about 3 to 5 years from now, the way we operate even today is going to look extremely different from the way that it is. You'll have maybe your UNS feeding an MCP and feeding data into AI agents, where you've got people talking and interacting with their plant, getting information back instantaneously and providing recommendations on how to improve manufacturing, how to improve their process in real time. We're going to get away from looking at historical information every single day or each week and then trying to figure out where we go from that. That information will still exist. Those dashboards are not going to go anywhere for a very long time. I don't see that there's always going to be a need to glance and look at information that is constant, right? But what is going to change is that I am going to be able to deep dive, not being a data analyst, not being a data scientist, into that information and just naturally ask, what do I need to focus my information? What do I need to focus my time on today? That's where I would see the future going for a lot of these tools. And so my advice is, if you're starting now, don't start with the tech. Start with your business outcomes. Is it scrap reduction? Is it uptime? Is it throughput? And then work backwards from that use case. Put governance in from day one, and then invest in your people. Your tech is going to be only as good as the team that starts to own these solutions. And technology is really the easy part. Culture and the open data architecture that you put in place is going to be what makes it really stick.
That's great advice. So, Rob, before we wrap up, any advice or one piece of advice you'd give somebody starting this journey right now?
If they haven't started, they need to start. And if they have started, we love seeing every walk of every type of customer on every walk of the journey. And so it's been interesting for us. If I were to try and pair like manufacturing to like real estate, if you think about a real estate agent trying to make descriptions of houses and one uses AI and the other doesn't, you could probably have one make 5,000, 6,000 descriptions a day, and you'd have another make 3. And so it's just, you apply that to manufacturing and how people are going to use these tools to improve their business. And you can just see how, while it makes sense to be fearful of it, but it also makes sense to see the huge opportunity that's there. And so exciting time, I think, in the industry, and really glad to be here and help shape it.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Bruce, Rob. Thanks so much for the great conversation today. And thanks to everyone for listening in. Hopefully we've given you some new ideas about how UNS, MCP, and containerization can work together to drive real change in manufacturing. Until next time, keep exploring what's possible with your data and technology.